south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, Latin America is just chock full of backpackers. Although I've never done it myself, I've never had the desire to share a room with someone I don't know, much less a bathroom. But still, they're pretty interesting people, and I'll often sit down and have a cup of coffee with one or two. Oh, and you can always spot a backpacker from a distance, besides the uncomfortable pack he's got on his back. When they're in a restaurant or diner or whatever, there are almost always quart-sized beers on the table. Except during breakfast, of course, that would denote a real alky. You see, quart beers are the absolute preference of backpackers because, for one thing, you get the volume discount. They're so much cheaper, and if you buy one, you can share it with all the other cheap-ass backpackers hanging around at the same cheap-ass joints. In other words, it won't cost you much to be friendly and kind to people you don't even know, or you just met by circumstance because they happen to be backpackers hanging in the same hostels and unsanitary greasy spoons that you do. That is, if you're a backpacker or a skin flint yourself. By the way, if you ever want to locate where all the backpackers are hanging, besides going to a low-end hostel, just ask someone in whatever Latin town you happen to be in, where's the very cheapest rot-gut Chinese restaurant? Because you see, when backpackers first land in any town, right after they check into their hostel, that's usually the first thing on the agenda. And I do believe there are more low-end, unsanitary, rot-gut Chinese restaurants in Latin America than any other place on Earth, even China. So anyway, I like to hear what backpackers have to say. So sometimes I'll buy them a coffee or a beer, or just eavesdrop on a park bench or in a restaurant, or in one of those confounding government or bank lines. Because, you know, everyone gets stuck in those lines eventually. They're the great equalizer. And man, after talking to so many of these guys and gals, I have built up a huge backlog of clueless backpacker stories. And occasionally I get emails, too, from backpackers who tell me some very strange stories. And man, do I have one for you today. But first, speaking of backpackers and having to share a bathroom. There's something unhealthy about using communal soap and picking someone else's hairballs out of the sink. And there's something else I never understood. In Spanish, it's called el baño. Baño is bathroom, comes from the root word bañar, which means to bathe. All right, now, here's the thing. Here's my observation. I don't think in all my 30 years here in Latin America I've ever been into a Latin bathroom where they had a bathtub. I'm serious. They do not have bathtubs in Latin America. Even if you buy yourself a brand new upscale condo or a beautiful penthouse apartment in a residential tower, you're not going to get a bathtub unless you specifically ask for one when the builder's on the job. In fact, I'd say only 1 out of 1,000 homes actually has a bathtub. Could be 10,000. Funny thing is, I've been into upscale homes where they've got a really nice jacuzzi, even big ones that hold 6 or 10 people, but they still haven't got a bathtub in the house. That's not to say when you go into the plumbing department in a hardware store that you won't see bathtubs. You see them all the time. They sell everything down here. Just like they sell garbage disposals everywhere too. But I've never ever seen anyone except myself and a few gringos who insisted on having them, so they ordered them special. I mean, look, garbage disposals are 50-year-old technology. And that stuff's pretty much standard issue in middle and upper middle class houses in the States, right? You gotta have a garbage disposal. And to tell you the truth, that's why I think there are so many drainage problems here in Latin America, besides the fact that the plumbing is always undersized. Problem is, what doesn't go into the kitchen garbage receptacle goes down the drain. If you haven't got a garbage disposal, you know what that means. In fact, when I first came down and installed one in my own kitchen, my cleaning lady wouldn't go near the thing. I showed her how it worked and everything, and when I turned it on, she backed off a few steps like I just pulled a pin on a hand grenade. Since the early days, I've had many houses and residences since then, and they've all had garbage disposals, and I installed them all personally. Why? Because I never met a plumber in Latin America who ever installed one either. So if you do buy one and have a plumber install it, you're going to be the guinea pig. So all these years in various houses, I've had garbage disposals, but in all honesty, I never heard the telltale sign of the motor kicking in unless I was turning the thing on myself. My cleaning ladies steered clear. They just didn't want to touch it. Why? They're afraid of those things. Now, I don't know if it's because they've seen too many Chucky movies. Yep, they've got them down here too, pretty badly dubbed, I must say. By the way, I've never seen a Chucky movie. For that matter, a Freddy movie. How about you? Oh, and about trash compactors. They sell them down here, too. In not so many places, but in upscale hardware stores. And first world franchise hardware stores like Ace Hardware. And in upscale kitchen stores, too. They've got lots of those places in very nice neighborhoods here. Yep, you go to a high-scale kitchen shop in a mall and you'll see trash compactors. That's another thing they sell down here, but I've never, ever seen one in a person's house. Even after all these years. And you know, I've been in dirt floor tin shacks all the way up to $10 million mansions. And still, no bathtub, no garbage disposal, no trash compactor. However, I've been in a few older upscale apartments and houses where they have in a master bathroom a matching bidet. No bathtub, but a bidet. In fact, Captain Mango had one in his last apartment. In fact, if I recall, one night he had a war with it and the tequila won. Actually, you know, when you think about it, a bidet is a very good idea. Can you think of any other good ideas the French came up with? Besides the croissant, champagne, and the guillotine? Now, of course, we all know that stuff you can do without. You know, the bathtub, garbage disposal, trash compactor, and the guillotine. But man, three cheers for first world conveniences, huh? When you can get them. That goes for dishwashers, too. In these big Home Depot-style hardware stores, they sell them. And they've also got Sears down here and Costco. And by the way, the name down here for Costco is Price Smart. Price Smart. Why they picked that name, I don't know. I wonder why they didn't pick a Spanish name, because people don't speak English here. People know what it is, but they have no idea what the name means. Duh. But where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about appliances that are available down here, but almost no one installs, and when they do, they go unused. Well, I have to say, in upscale homes and upscale condos and townhouses, they will have a dishwasher. But I'd say only one out of maybe 100 of them that are installed are in use, because the cleaning lady is either terrified of using the thing, or more likely, she did give it a try when it first was installed and ended up with some kind of disaster on her hands. As for me, when I'm living in a place permanently or somewhat semi-permanently, I'll almost always insist on a dishwasher, though I don't use it too much. I use it to sterilize stuff. You know, a couple times a year, you air out the cupboards, you take the dishes and plates and containers you haven't used for months and months. You give them a run through the dishwasher along with your toothbrush once in a while. That's a good idea. And everything can go back on the shelf spick and span, not to be used for another 6 months or a year. Hopefully your toothbrush won't suffer that fate. But I am digressing, and it's pretty early in the show to start digressing, isn't it? Anyway, I've got this email from Woody talking about clueless backpacker stories. Listen to this one. It just might take the cake. He says, Johnny, my brother-in-law was raised a Jehovah's Witness. He is a dyed-in-the-wool backpacker, has been all over the place. And oddly enough, even though he's backpacked through Latin America and other places, being a Jehovah's Witness, he doesn't really seem to have the first clue about the natural world, as in animal behavior and stuff. You won't believe it, but here's what happened to him once when he was backpacking and just kind of hanging out north of San Francisco. He and some friends went camping on the beach. You could still do that back then. And the weather was perfect that night. The water was warm and calm. And he asked one of his new friends if he could borrow one of their wetsuits and go for a swim in the middle of the night. He wanted to see some seals and sea lions who were often hanging out there. We're talking about north of San Francisco at the beaches of West Santa Rosa. Well, he swam out. And there were sea lions everywhere. They were barking and splashing and coming pretty close to him. And even though they were five times his size, they were docile and friendly. So he was loving every minute of it and wished he'd had a night vision camera or a GoPro, but they were a new item back then and few people had them. Then, quite suddenly, he said, the sea lions started making a very strange bark and they all vanished. Then, next thing you know, something bumped him on the side, gave him a little push. Then he realized it's very large. And a rough object. In his mind, he thought it was a redwood tree or log or something that was floating along. And he reached out with his hand to feel it and said it was like really rough sandpaper with coarse grains. Then he thought to himself, trees don't feel like this. So he reached his hands over the top of it to see if he could wrap his arms around it. This guy's 6'2", so he's got a big reach. But he can't reach over the top and touch his hands. The thing's girth was too wide. Then he tried to reach around and feel the bottom of it and couldn't feel where the round part of the bottom began. Then the object vanished just as quietly and as suddenly as it appeared. He waited around in the water a while, and the sea lions never came back. So next day, he's reading the local newspaper, and there's a story on the front page about a fishing boat that had a close encounter with a 21-foot great white shark. And he just about pooped his pants on the spot. Now he knows for sure that object that scared the sea lions off and had the texture of a really coarse sandpaper was indeed a great white. And by trying to measure the girth of that thing, he figured it was at least a 21-footer. And after that day, which was some years back, he swore he would never go into the water again, not even a swimming pool. He thought, Jehovah was kind enough to save him once, but probably not twice. But as they say, time heals all wounds. Guess what? He's in Costa Rica right now, doing water sports, living on the beach, and most of the time in the water. It's as if what happened before was in another life. Yes, Johnny, such is the life of a clueless backpacker. My sister's got her hands full. Which leads me to the obvious question, Johnny. What about sharks in Latin America? Seems like every couple of weeks you read in the news that some American somewhere has been attacked or even eaten by one. Just wondering, Johnny. Signed, Woody. Well, Woody, thanks for that, but it seems rather strange if you're a Jehovah Witness. You're not allowed to dance with humans, but with sharks? But you know, the question about sharks here in Latin America comes up more than you think. And believe me, it's never the locals asking the question. It's always gringos. Are there sharks? Are there sharks? Well, I'll tell you this. I've been practically everywhere in Latin America, and many times I see signs that say, beware of falling coconuts. I even saw a sign once that said, beware of jellyfish. But I've never seen a diagram depicting nor a sign saying, beware of sharks, nor have I ever met anyone who even had a story about a shark. Except for scuba divers, of course. You know, they're looking for them. And though some swimmers and people on the beach say they've seen a fin, but most of the time, they're mistaken. Besides, of the dozens and dozens of species of sharks, only 3 or 4 will attack humans. Now, as far as your odds of being attacked or killed by a shark, this will put things in perspective. Did you know that in 2017, 73 people died while taking a selfie? Which is probably a good thing. That's Darwinism in action, right? Look, do we really want those people reproducing? And the number of people killed in 2017 by sharks? Try 4. Though I gotta say, if you get bit by a shark and you survive, which is usually the case, by the way, you and those bite marks definitely get your 15 minutes of fame. In fact, for most people, that's the highlight of their life. One thing's for sure, everywhere you go, you'll be asked to exhibit your symptoms, and you'll always be the life of the party. Now, I know people are irrational, and there's all kinds of shark hysteria out there ever since Jaws. Now, speaking of the lifetime odds of being killed in strange situations or under odd circumstances, how about this? Your lifetime odds of dying in a car accident are 1 in 110. Of being killed in your lifetime by an accidental gunshot, about 1 in 8,000 if you live in the ghetto, and about 1 in 100,000 if you don't. Odds of being killed by a bee sting in your lifetime, 1 in 80,000. By an earthquake, 1 in 110,000. By flesh-eating bacteria, that's a new hysterical biggie these days, right? 1 in a million. A shark attack in your lifetime? Well, if you don't swim, never. But if you swim, 1 in 3.7 million. Likelihood in your lifetime of being killed by a terrorist? 1 in 46 million. And my personal favorite, your lifetime chance of being drowned in a bathtub? 1 in 840,000, unless you live in Latin America, then it's 0. Because they don't have bathtubs in Latin America. Well, here's a stat that'll make you crack a smile. Did you know that in your lifetime, you're 30 times more likely to be killed by a dog than a shark? And they say dogs are a man's best friend. I guess Einstein said it best. Quote, two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not sure about the universe. And Einstein, even though he was the most brilliant mind of the 20th century, didn't get everything right. Here's a guy considered the most brilliant thinker of the 20th century. No doubt the poster child for the definition of genius. Yet the guy couldn't hold his love life together, was divorced a couple times, had tons of trouble with women. So what's that say about the human condition? Reminds me of another expat Eddie saying, smart in business, stupid in love. All right, enough said about sharks, dogs, and coconuts. Let's have another email. This one's from Damien in St. Pete, Florida. He says, good evening, Johnny. I have recently renewed my passport after doing nothing with it for 10 years. And I've started looking into taking a vacation in Brazil during the first week of September. I heard you mention the fact that Brazil is scratched off your Plan B relocation list. Do you even recommend visiting Brazil just to visit? He says Brazil, Costa Rica, and Colombia are the countries I've been considering visiting. However, if you don't recommend any of those three countries, do you recommend Guatemala as a place to visit when you are not having your seminar? And my final question is, do you see a fair number of hourglass-shaped ladies in Guatemala like you do in other countries, by the way? Also, please send the water filtration system that you mentioned. Thanks, Johnny. Damien from St. Pete. All right, Damien, just a quick overview of Brazil, Colombia, and Costa Rica. All three are great places to take a vacation. However, if I was in Brazil, I'd stick to the all-inclusive resorts because the place is crawling with thieves and opportunists. Even in the tourist spots, you really have to look out. That's where the more sophisticated crooks and pickpockets hang. Because they know gringos and expats and Europeans coming for vacation arrive wearing rose-colored glasses. And a good percentage of them will let their guard down. That's what happens when the sights, smells, culture, and ambience are completely different from your own. Now, as far as Costa Rica, I lived there a couple of years, a long time ago, but I would never recommend that as a Plan B destination. Never. Though it is a great place to go for a week or two on vacation. And as for Colombia, I like it a lot. I could live there and be happy, but in many places, it's first world expensive. So you always have to weigh your nest egg and your budget, because if you've got a lot of money, let's say $1 million nest egg in a pension plan, whatever, you can live a really nice first world life practically anywhere. But honestly, I think probably 90% of the people that listen to this program would like to live the life of a first world person on maybe $1,000 to $3,000 a month, which is the definition of poverty in the first world. Which brings us back to Colombia. To live a nice first world life there, where the gringos are on the gringo trail, because most people, well, at least they get started by doing their Plan B on the gringo tourist trail as a soft landing kind of experience, especially if they don't speak Spanish, and 99% of gringos don't. The thing is, if you do end up on the gringo trail in Colombia, you're probably going to need about $2,500 to $3,000 a month to live like a first world person. You'll need even more dough in Costa Rica. Whereas in most of the rest of Latin America, including Brazil, you only need maybe $1,000 to $2,000 a month. I'm being real general with those numbers here. As far as Guatemala, Damien, I don't get why you're asking me if Guatemala is a good place to visit when I'm not doing my seminar. Guatemala remains the same whether I'm doing the seminar there or not. Either way, it's one of my top picks for one of the best Plan B destinations you could think of. However, if one of your contingencies, as you mentioned, is to find hourglass-shaped ladies, you'll find that in Guatemala, Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and almost all of Central America except for Panama, the hourglass figure lady phenomena is not at all as well represented as are the countries of Venezuela, Colombia, Panama, and the Dominican Republic. Now, if you want to get scientific and technical as to the real reasons, besides the fact that plastic surgeons are having a heyday in those four countries, it's the fact that in Mexico and Central America, there's a very high percentage of indigenous blood, up to 60% in some of those countries. And indigenous ladies and men, for that matter, too, are very short and referred to as cuadrada. Cuadrada. That means square or rectangular shaped. Allow me to explain. If you're down here and speak Spanish, you'll hear that term all the time. When a lady says, for example, to another, ella es bonita pero cuadrada, what that means is she's beautiful, but she's square. And they're not talking about her personality, attitude, or how she dresses. They're talking about her general body shape. You see, if you're looking at a lady with her back to you, in your mind, you could draw an imaginary square that runs across the top of her shoulders, down her sides, and below her butt, and back up again. That's a square or rectangle. And with the indigenous population, you'll see it's almost a perfect square. Whereas if you made that same measurement, tried to draw an imaginary square on those very curvy ladies from Venezuela, Colombia, Panama, and the Dominican Republic, let's put it this way. Their body parts are way out of the box. By the way, that term cuadrada, square, doesn't just refer to when you look at a girl with her back facing you. Turns out most indigenous folks, both male and female, are cuadrada when you look at them from the side as well. So there's few pronounced curves in that direction too. And that, Damien, accounts for the fact that hourglass figures are fairly rare unless enhanced by cosmetic surgery in Mexico and most of Central America. Same thing goes for South America, where there's a big indigenous population, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay, parts of Chile, because of all the Inca blood. And of course, in Central America, you've got Mayan blood, and in Mexico, Aztec blood. So if you're in South America, you're not going to find many curvy hourglass-shaped women in Peru, Bolivia, or Paraguay. So then how many of you listeners are offended by this kind of discussion? You say you're not offended yet? Well, just wait. The show's not over yet. All right, now we have another email. This one's from Mike. He says, Johnny, I've listened to your shows and have some questions. I'm thinking of possibly coming down before your January seminar and also taking the seminar. I was in Guatemala, Antigua, Guatemala, a couple of years ago and couldn't find any place to run or a track to run on. I'd like to do that. Do you know of any? Then he's got other questions, but let's tackle that one first. Yes, there are places and neighborhoods to run in, but I'm not privy to any particular places people are using these days, but I can find out in a second. I've got a really lightning-fast grapevine. So, not to worry. By the way, he's talking about my January 2020 seminar. Funny you should ask that, Mike, because I just picked the dates. We'll start Friday night, January 10th, and finish off Thursday night, January 16th. Details to come, so stay tuned. Then Mike says, here are some of my other questions. Number one, how will 5G affect Guatemala, and what can be done to protect yourself? You also mentioned countries like Chile will have it in place soon. Then he asks, where are the best places to live or travel for now? All right, Mike, 5G, they're testing right now in Chile, and it will eventually work its way throughout Latin America as it will the world. Except, the difference is if you're going to live in the city or slightly out of the city or in the boonies, because obviously it'll be rolled out first in the cities with a much denser overlap too. So then what do you do? Well, if you want to truly avoid as much of those 5G waves as you can, I suggest you live slightly out of the city or in the boonies. And when it comes in, use your devices sparingly. Because just like 4 and 3G that we're all using now, in order for you to be affected by the waves, you have to be close to a device that's receiving them. And if your device is off or you're not nearby one, you're getting an extremely scaled down dosage of EMF. That's why it's a good idea when you're on the phone to use headphones, not Bluetooth, but real headphones, and to turn off your Wi-Fi in your house at night. And when you're sleeping, don't leave any of your devices next to your bed. Another thing, I was talking to a gringo buddy of mine, an engineer, the other day. He was talking about how aftermarket products are going to come on the line once 5G is in, because people are going to start realizing it's damaging. And those aftermarket products will be able to limit the angle of coverage for a 5G device mounted on a pole outside of your house. In other words, you'll be able to get a device that you could attach or connect aftermarket that will only permit 5G coverage, let's say, in one room or one section of your house. So, for example, you can leave your smartphone in that room, or your router, it'll be connected and receiving and transmitting data, but when you're in the rest of the house, you're not bombarded with those waves. And if you've got computers or smart devices throughout the house, you can hardwire them with an Ethernet cable direct to the router in that room. It's a good idea, and you can picture that, can't you? Otherwise, though, without some kind of limiting filter like that, as long as you're carrying your phone with you, you're being bombarded all the time. But I can tell you this, in my place out in the coffee fields in Guatemala, right now, the nearest cell phone tower is probably half a kilometer away. And not so long ago, I took an EMF meter and I checked around the house. And man, it's just so clean and devoid of electric garbage and spikes. It's like I'm living in the age before cell phones. So obviously, the farther out you live from a city and the farther away your neighbors are, the less EMF penetrating your house, as opposed to, let's say, living in a residential tower. As soon as you turn on your Wi-Fi to see who's got routers in the area, there can be a dozen or more signals. And they're penetrating virtually everywhere, and you can't do a thing about it. Unless you make one of your rooms, preferably your bedroom, a Faraday cage. You know what that is, right? That's going to be really easy due to a certain kind of new paint. I'll keep you posted on that. All right, back to Mike. He says, your seminar will be covering El Salvador and Guatemala, right? How does El Salvador compare to Guatemala? Well, in a couple of ways. It's a lot smaller. It uses the U.S. dollar. It's got almost no altiplano, that permanent everlasting spring-like weather we like so much in Guatemala. Though it does, where it borders Guatemala, have a coffee-growing region that's a couple of thousand feet above sea level. It could be considered low altiplano. That's a very beautiful, laid-back, peaceful region there, if you're thinking about a plan B, in the coffee fields out in the boonies. Now, as far as the cost of living between El Salvador and Guatemala, El Salvador is slightly less expensive than Guatemala, real estate being much less expensive than Guatemala. But it's a less developed country. Their biggest city, San Salvador, is a little over 1 million people, which is about a quarter the size of Guatemala City. They have a bigger and nicer beach strip than Guatemala has on the Pacific side. But I find Guatemala itself is more lush and plush, and there's a lot more things to do. So if you're interested in having a beach house on the cheap, you like heat, you like surfing, you like water, I'd pick El Salvador over Guatemala. But if you want a more cosmopolitan style of living, I'd say Guatemala, especially in and around Antigua, Guatemala, and just outside in the eastern and southern burbs of Guatemala City. All right, and Mike's final question? He asks, what documents are necessary that need to be authenticated when applying for permanent or temporary residency? And he's talking about documents that need to be apostilled. Always a confusing word. Some people pronounce it apostille. Even weirder is the fact that word looks and sounds like the word apostle, like, you know, the 12 apostles. Now, that means, for example, if you have a birth certificate and you're from, let's say, Michigan, you have to send your birth certificate, certified copy that you got from your city's municipality, to the Michigan State Government State Department, it's called. Yep, every state has what they call a state department, if you can believe that. Anyway, if you look on the web, it'll say, how to get your documents authenticated or apostilled. Then you send your document to them with the check for $25 or $30. They want their cut. The dirty leeches, just to attach a signature and a piece of paper to the birth certificate you also had to pay for. You get it back and you ship it off to your attorney in whatever Latin country. So then what documents need to be authenticated or apostilled like that? Well, for residency, you'll need your birth certificate, as mentioned. And if you're married, your marriage certificate. And if you have kids, their birth certificate's apostilled too. Now, of course, you'll also need your passport, but you don't have to get that apostilled. But what you will have to do is something only lard-ass government blood clots could ever think of. You have to go to the U.S. Embassy or consulate in the foreign country where you're applying for residency and get a certified copy of your passport there. Always a big hassle because you have to make an appointment online to do that. And you know, the question comes up all the time, why can't you go down to the post office in Minneapolis or Chicago or Cleveland or whatever and have some certified copies done there and just bring them with you or send them to your lawyer in the country you're applying for residency? But no, that would be too easy. Instead, you're forced to get a certified copy at the U.S. Embassy or consulate in the Latin country you're applying for residency. How stupid is that? Anyway, that's what you have to do. Luckily, though, your attorney in the Latin country you're applying for residency can make that online appointment for you so that when you come down, you're ready to go. Because as you may have heard me say before, you can't just walk into the U.S. Embassy in whatever country and say, hey, here's my $50. I'd like a certified copy, please. Here it is. Like you used to be able to do just 2 or 3 years ago. Now you have to make that appointment online, and you won't get it that day. It'll probably be a week or two from when you sign up. Oh, yeah, and another thing. $50 to have a certified copy when they can do it right in front of you in 3 minutes? What a bunch of bloodsuckers, huh? And finally, Mike, when you asked the question, where are the best places to live and travel in now? That's absolutely impossible to answer unless you have a very specific wish list of what you like and don't like. Weather, altitude, cost of living, your state of health, things you like to do, for example, entertainment, hobbies and pastimes. What's your budget and nest egg? Do you want to buy, build, or rent? Do you want pets, animals, your own garden? You want to live in a high-rise, condo, apartment, or off the grid? You want on, off, or near the tourist trail? All those things have to be factored in when you're considering the best places to live or travel. And that's why I do so many of these phone or Skype consults. That's when we talk for an hour or a half hour or even more and discuss all those points. But only after you've filled out my Plan B consult questionnaire. You send that to me beforehand. Then we have a nice structure and we can go from there. So your first step, make a wish list, then we can hone it down. There are so many things to consider. Everyone's got their own wants, needs, and budget. South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.